Chapter 15, Part 1. The Five Characteristics of Good Philosophers. A philosopher is a seeker of wisdom. In the original sense, a philosopher is someone who strives for divine wisdom. This divine wisdom is not knowledge in some specialized form. It is not some baffling, complicated system enciphered in an ancient, forgotten language, only accessible to the few who are conversant with its hieroglyphs and who dole out tiny snippets of it, crumb by crumb, in modern literature. The conduct of academics whose job it is to analyze ancient manuscripts when they are discovered in archaeological excavations is a case in point. But no, the wisdom which is gnosis is omnipresent. It is an atmosphere incorporating numerous forces, elements, and radiations. The divine wisdom is contained, in a fundamental sense, in a radiation field. And anyone who lives in that radiation field and possesses a living soul principle draws from it not only life force and the substance necessary for transfiguration, but also wisdom. Wisdom is an aspect of the divine life force, of the divine spirit of love. When it was said of Jesus the Lord that he grew in knowledge and wisdom and in grace and favor with God and man, this is not a reference to his upbringing or education. It means that Jesus the Lord grew in the Gnostic life field and that this brought about its maturation and perfection. If you think about this, you will discover how much such a developmental process differs from development in the world of dialectics. The maturation and growth of a child into an adult does not involve the development of wisdom, but only the development of the intellectual apparatus. People use all kinds of child-rearing techniques and educational methods, many of which are essential to give the human being at least a semblance of humanity. It is only because of what people are made to learn at school and all the things they learn from experience that they are able to tolerate life. We do not want to devalue earthly knowledge by saying this, or to suggest it is not necessary, but only to compare it with gnosis. Biologically speaking, the human being is utterly deficient, so he has no choice but to resort to theoretical education in order to seem something and to survive the struggle for existence. Biologically speaking, the human system can take in nothing but solid food and the astral breath of death. And apart from perpetuating his bondage to nature, this breath gives him nothing at all. When a person becomes aware of this impasse and is profoundly conscious of a feeling of imprisonment, then he may become a philosopher in the ordinary sense, because he will start searching for the meaning of existence on the basis of his dialectical state of being. He will start trying to penetrate right to the essence of things, but he will not succeed because only one possibility is open to him, and that is to apply dialectical methods of investigation combined with experience. Suppose there is a book in an ancient language. Some people find it and say to each other, "This book is full of wisdom. We must find out what it says because we want to understand the meaning of existence." But none of them know how to read the ancient language, so they elect one person to learn it so that he can tell the others what is in the book. The chosen person then stands before the others as a teacher, but not a teacher of wisdom, for he is only talking about something he has read in a book. That kind of knowledge is only an intellectual definition of wisdom, but it can never be wisdom itself because the wisdom is not to be found in a book. Intellectual definitions of wisdom always tend to give rise to misunderstandings and differences of opinion, and hence to the variety of philosophical systems known today. Some originators of such systems meet with success. Their works become fashionable, especially if they can be utilized in any educational system, and their career is made. But when you realize that divine wisdom cannot possibly be obtained in this manner, you will see how sad it is that all this intellectual effort is expended to no avail. Divine wisdom cannot possibly be attained in this way. If you want wisdom, if you want genuine gnosis, you will need to change direction entirely. You will need to start walking the path of rebirth, the path of transfiguration. This path involves a death of the self and a new birth of the rose nucleus within you. This brings with it a new biological state and hence a new process of maturation, which makes it possible to grow in knowledge and wisdom. And that is the new state of consciousness. With every breath of the new magnetic forces that can be retained in your system, you will be inhaling wisdom. To possess the wisdom which is of God does not mean, as some people believe, to possess theoretical knowledge without having studied it. It means to inhale the gnosis via a new biological state of being. As a result, this wisdom, which is one with the breath of life, pervades the entire being, imbuing it with new faculties. Imagine how it would be if we said to you, "We have a book here that contains all the information you need to know. You must read it." But unfortunately, the book is written in a dead language from the remote past. We are therefore suggesting that you learn the language, and we reckon it will take you about 3 years. No doubt you would start studying straight away. But you can participate in the divine gnosis with far less effort and in much less time. If only you are willing to walk the rose path in complete surrender, it will lead to your growing in knowledge and wisdom and in grace and favor with God and man. And the result of your complete surrender will not be that you acquire knowledge you did not possess before, but that you make use of knowledge and abilities you already possess and have possessed for a long time. You possess the divine principle, the rosebud, in your heart. If you give yourself in complete surrender to that kingdom within you, you will gain 5 new attributes. You will become slight, subtle, dark, penetrative, and deep. In terms of dialectical nature, you will become slight, insignificant. In terms of the new nature, your sensitivity will become extremely subtle because of the new soul state developing within you. As regards dialectical nature, you will become dark, inscrutable. As regards the new nature, you will penetrate the unfathomable depths of the universal life and become immersed in the boundless ocean of the divine manifestation. This new approach to life passes all mortal understanding. Nevertheless, you are given an image of it, and not a fantasy one, but an actual concrete representation of what the new approach to life is like. The person who walks this path and progresses from power to power is circumspect, like one who fords a stream in winter. Modesty and circumspection come naturally to him, for is he not like a newborn child giving its first cry in the new life state? He is on his guard, like one who fears his neighbors. He is alert by day and by night, for, as a newborn child, he lies in the stable of the nature of death, and is Herod not lying in wait to kill the child. He is a stranger in a strange land, and he always needs to exercise the utmost caution to avoid being harmed in that land to which he does not belong. He is attentive, like a guest to his host. He is dedicated to the spiritual school and its essence, and always considerate towards everyone he meets. He disappears, like ice when it melts. Day by day, he is undergoing a process of constant change, a clearly demonstrable process of practical new life, which involves the disappearance of his former character type. He is simple, like uncarved wood. Simplicity is the distinguishing feature of his life, and ostentation is completely foreign to him. He is empty, like a valley. He is free of earthly desires, for his heart sanctuary has been emptied of them. To those who do not share his inner state, he is like cloudy water. He makes no attempt to display his true state of being or to radiate his light just for the sake of it. why should he cast roses before asses or pearls before swine? So many people will consider him foolish, insignificant, inferior, ignorant, for, like cloudy water, they cannot fathom him at all. It is very important for you to understand that this sevenfold approach to life can become your own in the fullest possible sense. Modest, watchful of the nature of death, dedicated to the spiritual school and to humankind, daily growing in grace and favor with God, and constantly changing, simple, empty of earthly desires, not interested in displaying your true state of being to dialectical people. As a result of this sevenfold approach to life, the five attributes will develop: slight, subtle, obscure, penetrative, and deep.